J-Mac is on the ground on one knee, scoops it up with his gloved hand, whips it over to Trotsky. A close decision, and he's out. The ball game is over. Bob Feller has his first
record book and the Brooklyn Dodgers.
67,000 fans at Municipal Stadium in Cleveland watching to see if Joe DiMaggio can keep his 56-game hitting streak alive. Jim Bagby on the mound, worked the count to 1-1, runner on first base. Here's the pitch. Joe DiMaggio swings that ground ball hit out to short to Lou Goodrow. He flips Ray Mack for one out, relays to drives at first. It's in time for a double play. Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak is stopped. It's the first half of the ninth inning. The Dodgers are leading by a score of 4-3. They're two out, nobody on base. Tommy Hendrick is up, and the count is 3-2. Reliever Hugh Casey is on the mound. He's walking around behind the hill now, getting set for the payoff pitch. This is a big one. Now he turns around. He looks in toward the plate to catcher Mickey Owen to get the sign for the next pitch. He shakes it off. Owen gives him another sign. Casey okays this one, steps on the rubber. He's all set to go. 3-2, the count on Hendrick. Joe DiMaggio on deck. Casey goes into the windup. Around comes the right arm. In comes the pitch. It's way inside. Hendrick swings. He misses. Strike three. But the ball gets away from Mickey Owen. It's rolling back to the screen. Tommy Hendrick racing down toward first base. He reaches it safely, and the Yankees are still alive with Joe DiMaggio coming up to bat.
Nobody knew it in those early 40s, but the call they'd soon be answering wasn't play ball. It was the draft call. Off to war went the established stars and the promising rookies. Hugh Mulkey of the Phillies was the first of the regulars to be drafted, and soon Rapid Robert Feller was in navy blue. And Ted Williams, a 406 hitter in 1941, was flying for the Marines. Baseball had barely settled down after the war when the Brooklyn Dodgers signed Jackie Robinson.
Jack, when Ricky brought you up, what was your chief ambition? To become a major league ball player, to become the first Negro to play in organized baseball?
Well, I don't think either one of them was that. I think my main ambition was to get along well enough with whoever I was playing with so that they would realize that there wasn't any friction because I was colored and they were white. I mean, we could play together. I think that was my main ambition, was to break down that barrier, not so much for me to go to the major leagues. I just wanted somebody to go. I didn't care who it was.
Rip Sewell of the Pirates was lobbing his blooper pitch over the plate, and nobody could hit it out of the ballpark until Ted Williams did it in the 1946 All-Star Game.
I grunted and groaned at that one because I saw it coming, and I kind of half-hitched, and then, boy, I waltzed up on it and swung as hard as I could swing and hit it just right. And I had a prevailing wind meeting me and everything, and out it went.
Next came three of the most exciting plays in all World Series history.
Enos Slaughter's on first base with two away. Harry Walker at bat. Bob Klinger on the mound. He takes the stretch. Here's the pitch. There goes Slaughter. The ball is swung on. There's a line drive going into left center field. It's in there for a base hit. Culberson fumbles the ball momentarily, and Slaughter charges around second, heads to third. Pesky goes out into short left to take the relay from Culberson. And here comes Enos Slaughter rounding third. He's going to try for home. Here comes the throw, and it is not in time. Slaughter scores.
Two out, last of the ninth, 2-1, New York. Well, Eddie Stanky is stepping in. You know, Yul Blackwell had pitched one no-hitter and was on the verge of pitching a second successive one against the Dodgers. He had gone 8 1/3 innings. And Stanky broke up Blackwell's bid for two straight no-hitters. So Stanky's up with the idea of trying to... Wait a minute. Stanky is being called back from the plate, and Lavagiotto goes up to hit. Gianfrido walks off second. Mix us off first. They're both ready to go on anything. Two men out. Last of the ninth. The pitch swung on. There's a drive hit out toward the right field corner. Hendrick is going back. He can't get it. It's off the wall for a base hit. Here comes the tying run. And here comes the winning run. Joe DiMaggio up. Holding that club down at the end. Big fella sets. Hatton pitches. The curveball high outside for ball one. So the Dodgers are ahead 8-5. And the crowd well knows that one swing of this bat, this fellow's capable of making it a brand new game again. Joe leans in. He has 1-3 today. 6 hits so far in the series. Outfield deep, round toward left, the infield overshifted. Here's the pitch. Swung on, belted. It's a long one. Deep in left center. Back goes Gianfrido. Back. He makes a one-handed catch against the bullpen. Oh, doctor.
When somebody you love goes away, you gather to say goodbye. And nobody before or since was loved the way this man was.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Bambino, the Sultan of Swat, Babe Ruth.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You know,
broadcaster Rosewell. Listen.
Well, I'd like to see Ralph improve a little off his showing so far this afternoon against Rush. He was couldn't do much, although he hit a hard smash to left field, which was taken by Aberson. He's facing Doyle Lade now. Maybe he'd do a little better. Any day.
And there's one you don't need to raise the wind at, Minnie. There it goes clear out over the scoreboard. Over into Shinley Park, a round triple for Ralph Conry's first of the 1948 season.
Oh, did he?
Let's hope that it's the first of 61.
Cleveland never saw anybody like Bill Vett, who came to town and in 1948 yelled pennant.
Here's the pitch, and Tebbett swings, and there's a hot shot down the third baseline. Keltner moves in, knocks it down, picks it up, finds the handle. Here's the throw to Robinson at first, and Tebbett is out. The ball game is over. The final score, Cleveland 8, Boston 3. Yes, the Cleveland Indians win their first American League pennant in 28 years. And man, oh man, how I'd like to be down on Euclid Avenue right now.
Expansion. That was the mood of the 1950s. Baseball was busting out all over. To Milwaukee, to Baltimore, to Kansas City, and then to the West Coast. Along with new places, baseball got some new faces in the 50s, like the fuzzy-cheeked youngsters the Phillies fans called the Whiz Kids.
Setting the Phillies defensively, Pudd'nhead Jones is at third, Granny Hamner at short, Mike Goliad at second, Eddie Waitkus at first, and in the outfield, Del Ennis, Richie Ashburn, and Dick Sisler. Dick Sisler, the man who's unbelievable in homer against the Dodgers, got the team into this 1950 World Series.
If you were a fan of 1951, you listened to this game. And if you were listening, you'll never forget where you were when you heard the shot heard round the world.
Bobby Thompson up there swinging. He's got two out of three, a single and a double, and Billy Cross is playing him right on the third base line. One out, last of the ninth, back of pitches. Bobby Thompson takes a strike call on the inside corner. Bobby hitting at 292. He's had a single and a double, and he drove in the Giants' first run with a long fly to center. Brooklyn leads it 4-2. Hartung down the line at third, not taking any chances. Lofton without too big of a lead at second, but he'll be running like the wind if Thompson hits one. Bracka throws. There's a long shot! It's going to be, I believe! The Giants won the pennant! 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 Bobby Thompson hits into the very back of the left field stand! The Giants won the pennant! And they're going crazy! They're going crazy!
The 1953 season was just 4 days old when Washington fans watched what may be the longest home run ever hit.
Yogi Berra on first base, Mickey Mantle at bat with a count of one ball, no strikes. Left-handed pitcher Chuck Staubbs on the mound. Mickey Mantle, a switch hitter, batting right-handed, digs in at the plate. Here's the pitch. Mantle swings. There's a tremendous drive going into deep left field. It's going, going. It's going over the bleachers and over the sign atop the bleachers into the yards of houses across the street. It's got to be one of the longest home runs I've ever seen hit. How about that? We just learned that Yankee publicity director Red Patterson has gotten hold of a tape measure, and he's going to go out there to see how far that ball actually did go. Man, that's got to be one of the longest wallops I've ever seen hit.
All that year, Mantle and his mates kept pounding the ball, except for one memorable day in the fall.
The fans know that Erskine, has either equaled or bettered the record. You can sense it. They want to see him beat it now. You don't get this guy on strike very often, but you never can tell. The big cat is one of the best free swingers in the business. The 0-2 pitch to Mize from Erskine. He struck him out! Carl Erskine has set a new all-time World Series record. He has struck out four men, woman, and child. They're up on their feet out here in Flatbush.
The 1954 Indians won 111 games, an all-time American League record. But they couldn't win one game in the World Series against the Giants, mostly because of Dusty Rhodes' pinch hitting and this catch-off thick works by the Say Hey Kid.
There's a long drive way back in center field, way back, it is. Third, Willie Mays just brought this crowd to his feet with a catch, which must have been an optical illusion to a lot of people. Boy, notice where that 483-foot mark is in center field. The ball itself, Russ, you know this ballpark better than anyone else I know, had to go about 460, didn't it?
It certainly did, and I don't see how well he did it, but he's been doing it all year.
The All-Star Game of 55 went 12 innings before somebody broke it up. Once again, Stan was the man.
In the last half of the 12th inning, the National League sends up Stan Musial, Willie Mays, and Ted Klazuski facing the big right-hander Frank Sullivan. Nobody on base and nobody out. Sullivan's first pitch to Stan is swung on as a drive back into right field. A long one. The ball game is over.
Finally, in 55, the Dodgers stopped waiting till next year and won the World Championship.
Johnny Podras on the mound. Dodgers leading 2-0. Billy Martin leads off second base. Gil McDougal off first. Yogi Berra the batter. The outfield swung way around toward right. Sandy Amoros is playing way into left center. Berra is basically a pull hitter. Here's the pitch. Berra swings, and he does hit one to the opposite field. Down the left field line. Sandy Amoros races over toward the foul line. He makes a sensational running one-hand catch. He turns, whirls, fires to Pee Wee Reese. Reese fires to Gil Hodges at first base in time to double up Gil McDougal, and the Yankees rally is done.
First to serenade dem bums, as usual, was the greatest of the Flatbush faithful, the Dodgers Symphony. It was the Yanks and Dodgers again in 56, but this time, Don Larson pitched with no windup, and the bums wound up with no hits.
That is 1-1, and this plow just straining forward at every pitch. Here it comes, a swing and a miss. Two strikes, ball one to Dale Mitchell. Listen to this crowd. I'll guarantee that nobody, but nobody, has left this ballpark. And if somebody did manage to leave early, man, he's missing the greatest. Two strikes and a ball. Mitchell waiting, stands deep, feet close together. Larson is ready, gets the sign. Two strikes, ball one. Here comes the pitch. Strike three. A no-hitter, a perfect game for Don Larson.
One pitch, one hit, and the end of future greatness.
Now Herb Score is ready to go again, looking in, taking his time, takes his cap off, wipes the perspiration from his brow, looking in now to Jim Hegan, got the sign, here's the windup, and the fastball comes down. There's a swing and a line drive, right back at Score, it hits him and he's down!
In 1957, it was the Braves that made Milwaukee famous.
The pitch to Henry Aaron, a swing and a drive back into center field, going back towards the wall, it's back at that fence! And is it caught or not? It's a home run! The Braves are the champions of the National League! Henry Aaron just hit his 43rd home run of the year!
The outfield around to the left. McDougal is on at third. Coleman is on at second. Tommy Byrne, the base runner at first. Hank Aaron is pulled around in left center field. The breeze is blowing across from left to right. Burdett's pitch swung on. Line grabbed by Matthews, who steps on third. And the World Series is over, and the Milwaukee Braves are the new world's champions of baseball.
Who ever heard of pitching a perfect game for 9 innings and losing? Harvey Haddix did.
For the final out of the 9th inning was a strikeout on Lou Burdett. It was the 8th turned in by Haddix, and at that moment, he became the 8th pitcher in all the history of baseball to pitch a perfect no-hit, no-run game. He then went on to get him in the 10th and the 11th and the 12th, retiring 36 in a row and counting the final two outs he had against the Cardinals in his last victory at Forbes Field. He retired 38 men in order before a man got aboard and then only on an error. One out, batter Adcock. Here's the pitch. There's a fly ball deep right center. That ball may be on through and over everything. It is gone, home run. Absolutely fantastic.
In 1959, the Go-Go White Sox, long the American League doormat, pulled themselves out from under those damn Yankees and toppled them for the pennant.
Jim Landis, right-hand batter now, steps in here at Comiskey Park, Chicago, to face Milt Pappas, the Baltimore right-hander. Game tied, 1-1. It's the last half of the 6th inning. The White Sox at bat. Aparicio on second base. Nellie Fox getting a pretty good-sized lead off first. Pappas looking in for the sign from his catcher, Triandos. Here's the set. Here's the pitch. There goes Aparicio to third. The throw by Triandos is not in time to Brooks Robinson. Fox takes second, and it's a double steal for the running White Sox.
The 60s, everybody can remember the 60s, a dramatic last time at bat by Ted Williams. That's what I'll always remember, because I was there.
The count 1-1 to Williams. Everybody quiet now here at Fenway Park after they gave him a standing ovation of 2 minutes, knowing that this is probably his last time at bat. One out, nobody on, last of the 8th inning. Jack Fisher into his windup. Here's the pitch. Williams swings, and there's a long drive to deep right. That ball is gone, and it is gone. A home run for Ted Williams in his last time at bat in the major league.
Yes, everyone can remember the 60s because they were highlighted with heroics like this unforgettable, unbelievable World Series finish.
Well, a little while ago when we mentioned that this one, in typical fashion, was going right to the wire, little did we know. Art Dittmar throws. Here's a swing and a high fly ball going deep to left. This may do it. Back to the wall goes Vera. It is over the fence. Home run. The Pirates win. Ladies and gentlemen, Mazeroski has hit a 1-0 pitch over the left field fence at Forbes Field to win the 1960 World Series for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
The 60s may go down in baseball history as a decade of smashed records. In 1961 alone, two of Babe Ruth's mightiest records fell. Whitey Ford beat his mark of World Series scoreless innings, and of course, the record they said would stand forever.
Here comes Roger Maris. Just standing up, waiting to see if Maris is going to hit number 61. Here's the windup, the pitch to Roger, way outside, ball one. And the fans are starting to boo. Low ball two, that one was in the dirt. And the boos get louder. Two balls, no strikes on Roger Maris. Here's the windup. Fastball hit deep to right. It could be it. Way back there. Holy cow, he did it. What's the matter? Fight for that ball out there. Holy cow, what a shot. Another standing ovation for Roger Maris. 61 home runs, and they're still fighting for that ball out there. People are climbing over each other's backs. One of the greatest sights I've ever seen here at Yankee Stadium.
Nobody will ever outsteal Ty Cobb. That's what they said until 1962, when Maury Will swiped 104. There's one modern-day pitcher even the old-timers put on their all-time list.
It is 9:46 p.m. 2-2 to Harvey Keene. One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed. A perfect game. On the scoreboard in right field, it is 9:46 p.m. in the City of the Angels, Los Angeles, California. And a crowd of 29,139. Just sitting in to see the only pitcher in baseball history to hurl four no-hit, no-run games. He has done it four straight years, and now he capped it on his fourth no-hitter. He made it a perfect game. And Sandy Koufax, whose name will always remind you of strikeouts, did it with a flourish. He struck out the last six consecutive batters.
4 years, four different American League champs. Everybody but Yankee fans figured it was great for baseball.
The Twins have won 98 games. Number 99 means the pennant. Here's the windup and the pitch. Strike three, strike him out. The Twins win. Final score. The Twins 2. The Senators 1. The Twins have won the American League pennant.
Next, it was the Orioles' turn, and they took it all in 66.
The outfield around to the left to Frank Robinson, the right-hand batter. Long drive to left field. Way back, kiss it goodbye, home run.
...1967 marked the closest race in American League history as the Red Sox came from ninth in 66 to finish first in 67. And an impossible dream became possible.
Here's Carl Yastrzemski, and there's a long drive toward right field, back near the bullpen. It is going to be gone, a home run.
Lundborg is within one out of his biggest victory ever, his 22nd of the year, and his first over the Twins. The pitch is looped towards shortstop. Petrocelli's back. He's got it. The Red Sox win. And it's pandemonium on the field.
Finally, the Tigers, who had gone hungry for 23 years, ate him up alive in 68.
Three men on, two men out. Game tied, 1-1 in the ninth inning. McDaniel checking his time with Jake Gibbs. The tall right-hander ready to go to work again. And the windup and the pitch. He swings a line shot. Base hit. Right field. The Tigers win it. Here comes K-Line to score. And it's all over. Don Wirt singles. The Tigers mob Don. K-Line has scored. The fans are steaming on the field. And the Tigers have won their first pennant since 1945. Let's listen to the bedlam here at Tiger Stadium.
1968. Sports writers call it the year of the pitcher.
Here's the set by Segui. The pitch. Swung on. A drive. First out of the dugout, racing out, and Horton is mobbed as the Tigers come from behind, and McClain has his 30th victory of the 1968 season.
Gibson has tied the record of Sandy Koufax, 15 strikeouts in a single World Series game. Trying for number 16 right now against Cash to break the record. He takes his set position. He delivers. Here's a pitch. Swing and a miss. He did it.
Lolich fires. Ball is hit high in the air. This should be the series. Freehand waving everybody away in foul territory. Detroit wins. Lolich is being mobbed at home plate. The Detroit Tigers, down 3-1, came back and have won it, something only two other teams have ever done. Pittsburgh over Washington in 1925 and the Yankees over the Braves in 1958. And now the Tigers have done it over the defending world champion St. Louis Cardinals. Down 3-1, they have taken three in a row, with Lolich today winning his third. Denny McLain won the fourth game yesterday.
There is no ending for what began 100 years ago. This great game stays great because for every veteran that calls it quits, there's a rookie that breaks in. Or a Mickey Mantle retires, a Ted Williams returns.
I haven't had a good year since about 1962 or 63,
And I've been thinking about retiring, and I got into Fort Lauderdale last night, and I talked to Ralph Houck for about an hour on the phone, and I met and had breakfast with Mike Berg this morning, and we all three got together and just decided it was about time that we give somebody else a chance to try to help the ball club.
I felt that if I was ever going to get back in baseball, this was the time. I knew my position was reasonably secure, and I felt that there was no other way to go but up. And I guess probably I wanted to get back in it more than I might have indicated.
There you have it. 1869 to 1969. Its stories and its sound. From one ball club in Cincinnati, Ohio, to over 150 teams from coast to coast in Canada. 100 years of baseball. And yet, it's only the first 100 years.